Welcome to the Great Security Debate. This show has experts taking sides to help broaden understanding of a topic. Therefore, it's safe to say that the views expressed are not necessarily those of the people we work with or for. Heck, they may not even represent our own views, as we take a position for the sake of the debate. Our website is greatsecuritydebate.net, and you can contact us via email at feedback@greatsecuritydebate.net or on Twitter @securitydebate. Now, let's join the debate already in progress.
But how they solved it was the Ring camera.
Oh yeah. It has value. It is interesting what it sees, but Amazon has been partnering outside of courts to give people access to those.
Privatized police state.
Yeah, exactly. And this is that whole privacy versus security balance, and then them taking the Ring and extending Ring and all of these little Echo surveillance devices and turning on this mesh network, which allows other devices as they walk by to ride it. So it extends your networks well outside the range of your traditional Wi-Fi, but it also creates quite the nice listening information. What other data collection goes along with it? Amazon tried this. They were part of a pilot project in Toronto, also called Sidewalk. There's an area of Toronto around the water that they were trying to deploy this, and it was a multi-year effort. But it ended up not launching there because one of the primary concerns was the privacy implications of it. They were going to build out this whole type of infrastructure in a physical area and provide all these benefits, but also get a lot of benefits back for them. And now that technology has been pushed into, it's been distributed. It's almost like when we have somebody attacking from an IP address and you block that IP address, and then they decide to go wide and they bring in all of their IP addresses from their botnet to try and attack you. This is the same kind of thing. You quashed one project on Sidewalk, and now it's showing up everywhere. But it's one of those, and it's going on by default. So you have to know that it went on if you don't want to be part of it, and you have to figure out how to turn it off. And to me, in this day and age, that's still very not cool. Increasingly, because what's it collecting? Are you subjecting the people in your house to, or that visit you, or that walk by your house to being collected? We don't know a lot about all of that, other than the benefit part, which is you've got this cool network that if I walk by, so the other part of this story is that Tile, who have recently the scorned ex-lover of Apple when Apple released AirTags Apple is doing something somewhat similar using their phone network as a sensor system, so that if I are you guys familiar with how AirTags work?
Yeah.
Okay. So for those listening, the idea that AirTags is the new key fob, the new tracking device from Apple, and as it goes near other Apple devices like phones, I think it's just going to be phones and iPads, anything that's a Find Me device. It'll sense it. It'll report back some number, privatized number. And you should quickly be able to track where your device is. If you lose your, if you lose your keys, you lose your luggage. I'm actually excited to lose my luggage now because I want to see where it goes throughout the airport.
Said nobody ever until today.
Actually, the implementation will be throw one in your bag. And there have been people who have already done this. They've mailed these devices to see how they track.
Nice.
So it's got the same concept, but they're not using fixed devices. They're using Apple iOS devices. The interesting part, though, is that Apple has been pretty clear about the methodologies they're using to create these numbers, to anonymize and privatize them. And they've been pretty clear about how they're going to use them. And the answer to that is not at all. So there's an interesting inherent trust. They're leveraging that trust that they've been building up for some years around privacy to say, no, and nobody has had, you know, bad words to say about AirTags, with the exception of some of the potential for stalking. And that's a whole other topic.
Right.
And, you know, that exists in any kind of tracking mechanism and is hugely important. But that's not, you know, that's not this particular premise. You know, so the Apple devices are out there, Tile. There's a lot of antitrust discussions going on between companies like Epic, like Tile, like Spotify, like with Apple or versus Apple. Tile took their ball and went home and went over to Amazon's network and are going to be leveraging this same kind of thing through Amazon for the Tile. So there's altruistic, there's capitalistic, but very positive intent use of this. But so I guess the question I have for both of you is, wait, what a long preamble to a question. It better be a good question. Is, you know, the idea that there's all of this, you know, we have all this tracking going on as we're using technology today, as we're using our web browsers. We've got, we'll talk in a little bit about some of the things that Google announced at I/O around privacy. And I use that term in pretty big quotes when we'll talk about that when we get there. Yeah, but the idea that technology is tracking us in ways that we may not even realize. And now there's steps being taken to extend that even to places to try and get better access to our physical location without being clear about how they're going to use that. There's a benefit. It's back to the classic security versus privacy or utility versus privacy discussion. So I guess, Eric, what, you know, what are your thoughts on creating these kinds of mesh networks for utility and the benefits versus the detractors?
Yeah, it's, there's a lot of emotions around this. There certainly is. And as we think about it, if we boil it down to its kind of root level of just tracking, right, it's really not anything new. I think it's more overt now that it's being commoditized. We can now buy products to track ourselves, allow others to track them. But I mean, hey, think about it. Think about some of your downtown scenes and some of the advancements in cameras that have gone on for the longest time, right? They can tell that, hey, Eric Willie walked around this building four times over the span of 3-4 hours, right? So that's, we've been tracking that for the longest time. You know, you think about what was my enemy of the state. A lot of that's actually, that's been true for a long time. It's just been kind of under the covers. It's not really in anybody's face. We all suspected it was going on, but now we move to, this is overtly being monetized. I don't know. For me, I keep drawing back to, just because we can doesn't mean we should. And it's interesting, the losing of things. And actually, the first thing that came to mind, if you want to lose your luggage, you know, this, you know, a good Air France trip over to Charles de Gaulle will help you with that. The percentages are pretty high that you'll lose your luggage, but.
And your mind as you transit de Gaulle as an airport anyway.
Story for a different day. I don't think I've ever not lost luggage going there.
Dan, I was going to throw something out there. I've been reading as you were talking, trying to go back and look at if this was the first time a company had not only come up with this idea or technology, but actually applied it, and how different from Apple it was with the AirTags. But I want to throw an example out of something that in its use case, when you make people believe that something is going to improve or you've built up enough trust. When I worked for a Japanese company, years ago in Japan, they implemented for the first time trackers. When you came in, you had to scan your badge, right? Before that, everything was on trust. But the reason for it was they wanted to make sure, and this was after the downturn, that people were leaving on time and not staying too late, meaning not overworking themselves, all right? And there was a big thing about mental health. So it forced people to have to leave at a certain time to actually go home. So that this wasn't done as like Big Brother, we want to make sure you are working and you are coming to work on time. From a cultural standpoint, almost everybody came in on time and everybody actually worked a little bit too late. But what ended up happening fast forward a year later when they moved smoking outside of the building. So before, each floor had this room that you went into. But the government in Japan also is really made a strong push that smoking is bad for your health. And when that gets pushed down from an emperor level, literally the world or the population says, no, we agree. And immediately the companies, at least the company I worked for, pushed all that outside, as well as several others in that area. So what ended up happening though with that tracker though is no matter, so if you had to go outside, you also had to scan it. And what they ended up finding was the people that were going outside all the time. It was, if you want to call it unintended, meaning when they first put that in place, it wasn't meant to see who smokes all the time. But fast forward a year later, and as people started to voice, well, look at so-and-so, they leave all the time, right? And this is somebody going from the sixth floor, having to go down the elevator, go outside, smoke, then come all the way back in and go up.
Right.
So I look at this as an example of, when you say like, well, look at what it can help you do and all the things, you know, from lost items, et cetera, right? There could be some positives there, but on the backside, the technology that they're putting in place and what they can use it for, whether or not they've set out and put in stone, like, you know, what was the Google's mantra prior was don't be evil, you know, years ago when they first started.
Yeah.
And I know Amazon, Google, Apple have all worked very hard to try to build trust back with the community as things have happened. And I think Apple's probably been more transparent in my opinion, but when you put something like this in place, you know, with great power comes great responsibility. And this is a lot of power.
Well, I keep coming back to it. The thought that keeps crossing my mind is privacy has to be an opt-in model. That if you're going to use my data in a way not intended when I originally signed up for a service, you have to come back to me and ask me if that's okay. Allow me to opt into the new functionality. I struggle with this. And this is a very US-centric thing. And you know, if we go back to episode number one, as we were talking through privacy, this is one of the elements that we brought up, that we keep pushing the lengths. I'm going to push the line a little bit further. Okay, today it's you know, if you look at a lot of technology came out of good usage. Look at Facebook, right? Facebook, when it originally came out, we're connecting college campuses, allowing students to talk and all of that. Look where it grew today. Not to use that as an example for all technology, but you know, today it's, okay, we're creating a mesh network to track these little dongles on where your keys are going.
Mm-hmm.
Sounds benign, but we don't know what tomorrow holds. And we've now taken a step further in pushing the connectivity of all of that. You know, you think, Brian, I go back to your example, at least there, I feel like that is somewhat of an opt-in model. You signed up to be part of that company and they're tracking within the confines of their building and what you're doing for them. That's their data. If we start, as we look at what Apple's done, they've now created this on the Apple army is now live everywhere. Amazon's doing the same thing, that all of these devices are now being used for more, but it's everywhere. It's not in the confines of just locations they own, and it's forced upon us.
That's one example of opt-in, but take a certain rental car company like 15 years ago who was caught with, when you say opt-in, there's a reason why there's like 20 check marks when you go into a rental car. Do you agree to this? Do you agree to this? Do you agree to this? Because what they found was the rental car companies figured out that they can just add things on and it's a small monetary amount. And it looks like those are things that the person chose, right? But it would add $5 or $6 on to each rental. And you took millions of rentals. And I mean, it was just a cash cow coming in with the different insurance, the gas, you name it. And now it's, you have to ask the question, do you want that? Yes or no, right? Do you want this? Yes or no? And it is an opt-in model. And I think most of the people like that transparency because it makes it very clear. Nope, I asked for that. And I said, yes, no, I said no to that. And in this case, this has been going on for a long time in tech, where it's not really an opt-in.
No, the default has been opt out. We'll put you in and you have to figure out. And GDPR changed that in their realms, where opt in became the primary default. And Brian, you bring up two points that I really wanted to cover. So thank you for that. This opt-in idea is starting to take hold elsewhere. iOS 14.5 was released recently for Apple devices, for iPhones and iPads. And with this came a new interesting change. This is their application transparency tracking, I think it is. Application tracking transparency, ATT. It was this feature that if you're running an iPhone, you likely saw this. You rebooted after the update and it started saying, this app would like to track you. Do you wish to let it do so? Yes or no? And you could turn it off for the whole system too. It's harder to find if you want to turn it off for the whole system. It's under settings, privacy, tracking, and then you slide the little slider over. I tell you that so you can go ahead and go do that if you'd like. It turns off all of cross-app tracking and removes people's ability. There's this identifier for your device that is, you know, comes with the operating system, and it's been used to look at your interactions across Apple devices for quite some time, and is a key part of the advertising ecosystem. But it was on by default, and applications had access to that by default. Now with iOS 14.5, they're actually asking people, do you want people to have this? Facebook was furious when this came out, and they actually started running campaigns about how Apple wants to kill small business, Apple this, Apple that. Sure enough, when you take the moment to ask people whether they want to be tracked for things, 96% of people said no. If you actually, then now we know why people defaulted to opt out model when they built applications, because 96% of people won't. And we've built entire financial ecosystems around the expectation that we get hordes of data and can use it for whatever the heck it is we want. Now that model is clearly changing. The other thing you mentioned, Brian, which I think is equally important, is scale. You know, the $5 add-on, when it was at a small scale, it's still wrong, but it doesn't have quite the societal impact. You look, go back to Tile. Tile has been doing this same kind of device-based tracking, where if you're running the Tile app, Chipolo as well, they're a more European-focused competitor to AirTags. But they've been doing this kind of thing where if somebody running the Tile app comes in close contact with within a range of somebody with a Tile, it'll register it and they'll do it. And they've been doing it securely for quite some time, you know, probably 10 years now. But at scale, it was at a smaller scale. People didn't realize it. People didn't think about it. The users that bought a Tile opted into it. Same thing with a Find My Device with a AirTag. You're opting into this kind of tracking. But now it's at a scale that is monumental, which also makes it far more useful, because you're going to be your AirTag is going to cross a device far more frequently. Your Tile now is going to, when they're working on these Amazon, because we have these little surveillance devices, everyone has these surveillance devices all throughout their house that are going to go on this sidewalk network. Those Tiles are going to become far more responsive, far more useful, and far faster to update. So, hey, there's some utility there. But again, it comes down to the difference of, I have a pretty good idea about how the Find My network is going to use the data, even at scale. I don't have a good idea of how and what the Amazon network is doing for with that data and with any other ancillary data they have, now that they have ears listening out all over the place. You couple this with some of the concerns that have been voiced around the Ring, the use of Ring cameras for other purposes, sometimes involving law enforcement, sometimes involving warrants, sometimes not involving warrants, and partnerships with police departments. And I want to be crystal clear, I do not have the details of those agreements in front of me. There is value to having these kinds of, to helping the police to find, especially if there's evidence. But you need to do that within the confines of the courts of law, not as private discussions or back end sales. That is Dan's opinion and may not reflect that of my two colleagues here. But the, you know, so we have this scale problem. Now it's big and now it's affecting everybody. And now I'm walking by a house and these networks are going to start. Are they going to start looking at the Bluetooth devices that come by? Are they going to start looking at the Wi-Fi devices that come by and looking at who's moving in what areas? And now can we sell them more things because we're knowing, you know, there's this underlying, what are you going to use this for? And how are you going to sell me crap? Especially because we just cut off a whole bunch of people's knees from the device tracking perspective. Oh, and by the way, I just saw a piece and I'll see if I can find it and put it in the notes that the effectiveness of Apple's Wi-Fi and they do MAC address changing, which wreaks havoc on enterprise trying to do, you know, trying to say, hey, this is an actual device that's authenticated. Let them on our enterprise Wi-Fi. As you walk by, they're changing the address that your phone spews out on a regular basis to keep you from being tracked as you walk around. Turns out this implementation in iOS recently is hugely effective. That's great. So what does that mean for this kind of thing? And maybe it's not an issue. I don't know. Maybe it's not an issue that there's going to be this Amazon network that's just, you know, listening. Maybe they're not. I'd love to see more transparency though.
I would love to see what the difference in value is to consumer data that they can use to monetize versus improving the manufacturing sector and returnable packaging. And where I'm going with this is I do think there's a value in, and I can still remember when I was starting off in automotive, and this isn't an automotive conversation because this goes clear across the board. I promise you, look at the Suez Canal, look at what happened as things shut down for 3 months. Right. And as things started to pick back up, it was, where's all our packaging? Right. Well, right. You had all these containers located on one side of the world, but you had all these finished goods located on the other side of the world. And then trying to figure out where everything's at is really, really hard. And I'm sure, Eric, there's as you're working now in the tier one space, one thing that you'll start to find or hear about is the idea that when packaging gets lost, and we're talking not boxes, people. Okay. We're talking giant metal racks that you spend thousands and thousands of dollars on to put finished door frames, to put parts of airplanes, right? And these things are used back and forth, and it's everything's just in time. So if packaging gets lost, which happens all the time, you have to resort to an expendable package. And it's the cost is on you, the burden is on you until you can prove otherwise to the OE, the original equipment manufacturer. And I can use one example on a door frame scenario where packaging ended up little by little not being returned to a plant. Within 6 months, we had spent over $1 million on building boxes, because these aren't just cardboard boxes, freight boxes, in order to ship door frames halfway across the country, because you can't shut down manufacturing. Now, the conversation back then was, similar to Tile and AirTags, there was the almost like a Bluetooth device that could go in and you'd have to create these what's the word I'm looking for? It's like a waterfall, I want to call it, in gates, where when things come in and go out, you know that something left or something came in. So you know that it boarded a truck, right? But this was in its simplest form. And if it showed up at the OE, it showed it entering into your customer's location. And if it never left, you could tell the customer, well, you have it, right? But the problem was, this was added like a dollar or two, up to $3 or $4 per box. And no customer was going to pay for that. But if you looked at the implications long-term and the millions and millions and millions of dollars it would save, it would pay for itself. But this goes back to security and the idea that, well, can you show me what it's going to save us today, money-wise? Well, it's very difficult. I could tell you it could save you $1 million if we got hit with this type of ransomware or this type of malware, but I can't necessarily prove it until it happens. So I look at, if Amazon would have looked at this from the standpoint of how could we help manufacturers find all the different types of packaging, freight, cargo, shipments, come up with a way that's easily trackable, because the way it's done today is very manual intensive across several different industries. But I think the difference is they look at the data value. What's more valuable from a marketing standpoint? is all this data that you gather on what people do, what people like, where people go, where people are, right? But at the end of the day, if you really wanted to help people out and you could improve the overall cost of finished goods because they're not spending extra money on expendable packaging that they have to throw out, mm-hmm. the overall cost of the consumer good would go down and people could spend more. I can't necessarily prove it, but I can tell you when things cost less, I would actually buy X over Y if it was less money. And that is only Brian's opinion.
But well, I think Brian's point there is also interesting. The one thing we haven't seen on this whole thing is the implication of, let's go back to iOS and Facebook. We turn off the tracking. Now, when this feature was rolled out, there's a screen that companies, that product, that apps can add that tells a little bit about what they're going to see, what a user is going to see before they get the prompt to track or not track. And on the one that Facebook put out, it said, keep Facebook free. And by the way, this was Facebook, this was Instagram, this was WhatsApp, all Facebook properties, Oculus too, I think.
I've got as one. They said,
you know, Amazon. If you say no, ecosystem. Don't track, we may have to charge for Facebook. And, you know, people said, apparently people like, all right, that's fine. But now let's flip to the other side of this whole discussion, which is ads pay for the services that people like, right or wrong, good or bad. It's a true statement. Can we all agree on that? Okay. So now we pull out the effectiveness of ads. Oh, by the way, this whole conversation is making the assumption that targeted advertising is effective. There are many who posit it isn't, and one of the fears that Facebook has is their special sauce is that they provide Spice very Girls. Targeted advertising to people, so that the ads see the right people. There are those who say, and I'm not an expert in this, there are those who say that targeted ads are the same or within a margin of error as effective as untargeted ads. And Facebook would then hope never to have this fact be proven out, because that's what makes them distinct, is they can provide ridiculously well-targeted ads. So two things come into play. One, the idea that, let's make the assumption that targeted ads are effective and Facebook needs that information to maintain their special sauce, that maintain effective advertising. Now, without that kind of tracking, Facebook then loses ad revenue. Facebook loses the ability to, to take in the money it takes to run this quite significant system. And they do have to charge. Let's say they do have to charge people. Now people are going to be, it was easy to say, don't track me. Now it's going to say, if you want to continue using Facebook, it's going to cost you $5 a month. Now this is not happening, just so everyone knows, this is not something that's out there today, but it's a reality of the financial dynamics. Now you have a $5, your trade-offs are give up data, track, or pay $5 a month. Or the third option is don't use the service. People haven't been faced with that question yet in this particular scenario. So it's easy to make a decision. I don't want to be tracked. But when you come onto the other side and you say, okay, now it's going to cost you $5 a month to do this. Now you have to make a real value proposition in your own head as to whether or not this service is worth it. And I think that in certain jurisdictions around the world, people are going to go back and be like, it's just data. It's already out there anyway. I might as well just give it to them. People are well within their rights to be able to do that. But I don't know that, again, back to the transparency, I don't know that there's enough transparency out there so that people understand what that really means. So I think this is not over. The other side of the coin has not dropped on this, and I think that it's going to be interesting. Now, of course, the wild card in all this is the idea that untargeted ads are just as effective as targeted ads, and if that's the case, then Facebook can continue to sell ads to people without this data, and go about their merry business. This applies to Google. This applies to everybody else who does ads as their business. But when people get to that point, they're going to have to make that. People are going to have to make that value proposition decision at some point in the future. Especially if we move away from ad based systems, we've already seen it in newspapers more and more. where you have to pay to get access. And this, of course, rankles a lot of people because information, you know, information, quote, wants to be free, or that, you know, this is for the good of all. But, you know, the reality is things do cost money to run.
I was going to throw one question out. Dan, Eric, do the two of you own any IoT devices with the name Alexa, Ring? Dan is shaking his head.
No, I do not.
Eric? In the Amazon ecosystem. And I'll be honest, I never heard of Alexa until I was cooking a dinner party for a friend, and it was actually their rehearsal dinner for their wedding, and he brought in this little round cylindrical speaker and said, do you want to listen to some music while you're in here prepping food by yourself? And I said, yeah, turn on whatever you want. He goes, no, you can just ask it to play whatever you want and it will play. I'm like, are you serious? He said, yeah. So, I mean, I was able to throw out The Boss, a few other bands that I'm not going to say out loud. That way people can't make fun of me. Spice Girls on repeat. But this was fantastic. And I literally spent 4.5 hours sitting there prepping, listening, and I could change it up. And it was so cool. And as soon as I got home, what did I do? I bought one. I bought one for my kitchen. Then on top of that, we bought one in the family room area. And this is prior to me getting into security, because I never thought for a second that they'd be listening or tracking or doing anything. And now sitting in this position, knowing how they want to use all this, I feel like I have, or how Sidewalk is going to work. I feel like I have all these devices in my house that I bought, so that Amazon, knowing what they were, I firmly believe that every business has long-term plans, stretch goals, right? And knowing once they got all these devices put in place, that the bigger picture was, what could those devices do? I do believe that there's a lack of trust and transparency. And now I put all these devices in place, and it's, and everybody knows from a business side that if you can make somebody dependent, like what was the saying? Your parents' luxuries become your necessities.
Oh yeah.
Those little things have become a necessity. We're getting ready to take the kids to school. And Kelly says, what's the temperature today? Cause we're trying to put jackets on the kids. And I just yell out, Alexa, what's the temperature today? She tells me what the temperature is currently, what the high will be, and if there's a chance of rain. That tells me in a heartbeat, I need to make sure to get the rain jackets on. It's a little bit cold. You know, tell my daughter, please put on some socks. We got to put shoes on. We're not wearing sandals today. That just saved me like 5 minutes of having to go look up what the temperature was. And those little things become dependencies. And when people become dependent on things, it's like, am I sacrificing, you know, this ease of lifestyle I made just to give up a little bit of data? Maybe. But what is that you're really giving up, and really in the realm of privacy?
Yeah, that's interesting. Actually, I was gonna kind of head in that direction as well. And I almost wonder, you know, as we look at markets and market share and all of that, that there's been this metric out there. It's a share of wallet, right? That if you look within a market space, I almost wonder if that's going to transition to share of household. And you almost see kind of an Amazon, Google bake off on what percentage of the home do I own, which is interesting. But to take it to another length and where you're heading, Brian, so what? I sell all of my data. They track everything I'm doing. What is the negative impact to me? Is there a negative impact? Because certainly, I think if you look at it from Amazon, Google's, Apple's perspective, there's certainly a positive that you can see their ecosystems growing, their customer base is growing, people like the features that all of that data brings to the table. And just to preface this, this isn't necessarily my view, it's just kind of the alternative perspective. So what? All my data is out there, and if I have a better experience, isn't that to the betterment of the whole?
So I'm going to go back to my library background and talk about the chilling effect that people have that comes when people realize that the things they ask for maybe used against them. The idea, this goes back to a talk I gave at an American Library Association conference some years ago. The idea that democracies are built on informed constituencies, and the freedom, when people were coming to the U.S. Hundred years ago, the idea that they were coming as immigrants from places with regimes where what you read could be held against you. The books you had in your possession, the knowledge you had, especially if it was on certain topics, was potential for either, reprimand, death, or expulsion. And creating an environment where people are free to search for the things they want to. I had a friend who came to me and said, Dan, I want to know how to search and do things without it being tracked, because I don't want necessarily ads to show up about this topic. And therefore they did not do the research that they wanted to do, or that they needed to do for that particular situation. And what could happen is a whole lot of things. Things like life insurance, things like being denied life insurance because you searched on cancer. Oh, well, maybe they have a predisposition for it. Maybe they're worried about it. Maybe they know something that we don't. Or if you start searching on the outcomes of a test result, now we have a little bit more information about your health. Can we do better at getting you health outcomes? Yes, we could. But how will we use that to improve profits? You're no longer a good insurance candidate for this particular piece. We get the genetic information from your 23andMe and correlate that. And now we know a lot about how to sell to you, what kind of health defects. The other thing is, back to this all comes down to trust. I have a lot of concerns about manipulation in ads. The idea of targeted advertising, to me, is tantamount to manipulation. I feed you the ads, it is ripe for being abused with manipulation. I feed you the ads that are pertinent to you in a way, and we saw this during the elections, and this is not going political, but just during the 2016 elections, in which there were micro ads that were placed out by person that were meant to resonate with that person. Hundreds of thousands of different versions of ads that were intended to resonate with that person. That to me, I still believe that we have, individual will, and I don't want somebody else manipulating what I see in order to try and get me to do something that they want me to do rather than, I want to do.
Dan, one thing I was going to say on that side of it, and I'll come back to this, but it's really interesting to see what other countries did using Facebook during the political campaigns. And that if you actually clicked on it because you're like, what is this? And read it. Now there was more stuff showing up for you to read upon, right?
Yep.
Which is real scary that other countries picked up on the way our software and tracking was actually working.
We are not a good role model.
And there's countries like, historically, if you look at Hungary and the Czech Republic, that absolutely would never want any of this because they were persecuted terribly for their beliefs. I mean, they changed food culture, changed for an entire group of people. I know I'm going straight to food again, but I'm going to bring it back to something Eric asked. Who cares? And I heard this from my own family. My dad, when I told him he should opt out of something, he goes, yeah, but Brian, at the end of the day, they have all my data anyways. That was like the giving up model. Like, right. I already believe they have everything. I just give up, right? Because I do like some of the convenience it gives me. But I would say, like, if it's a Friday afternoon and I ask Kelly, like, hey, or sorry, I ask my significant other, like, hey, what would you like? And, for dinner tonight, vegetarian, throws out what she wants. One of the kids says, I want burgers, right? And I'm like, oh, sliders do sound good. If Alexa was real quick and able to tell me exactly that Bourbon's in town is offering a special on sliders, 3-for-1, that would be great. I haven't gotten that yet, but that would be the one time where, like, I throw something out. If you could tell me there's a place in town, highly rated, that has a special on sliders, I would never know that unless they told me. And this is not Brian's opinion, because personally, I don't actually want it to tell me that, but it would be kind of cool if I really wanted sliders and I said it, And they were able to tell me who has the discount in town.
Well, so, at least the discount that paid to be the one that got your ear there.
So tying some of this together, then let me throw out the question that in the context, and we started with the mesh networks that we're seeing come out of Apple, that we're seeing come out of Amazon. So those mesh networks, if that didn't have the propensity to tie back into the biggest drug the world has ever seen, which is social media, would it be an issue? Because if those two were decoupled and they didn't tie together and the data didn't come back to me in the form of ads and articles that may or may not be true on social media, would it actually be a concern at all?
No.
I think there still would be a concern to it, Dan, a little bit, but definitely not the concern that we see today. And Dan, go ahead.
Well, I was going to say there's a talk that my good friend Gary Price and I have given a number of times around, you know, the so what of all this data. And it's just back to just because you can doesn't mean you should. And you have this data. The other thing that we didn't talk about, and then I'll jump over to your question, Eric, was that, you know, now you have all this data that you are collecting. Now it is a treasure trove. And I've been having this discussion lately with a lot of people about data lakes, these massive dumping grounds of every piece of data that a company has or wants or uses, and some, a lot of it that they don't use and don't need. But now, talk about a big target. It's like leaving your purse in the back of a car with a big sign that says, "There's a purse in here. I dare you not to smash the window and grab it." my apologies to the person who gave me that unfortunate example last night as they were cleaning up the glass from the back of their car. If it was decoupled, I think there's always the risk. Unfortunately, it's not just social media, it's the quest for the quest to meet market objectives, the quest to, you know, find other ways to grow. And this has been a quest for quite some time, even before social media companies, is how can I take and use what I've got in different ways to grow it? If there were, you know, I dare use the word legislation, if there were restrictions on what could be collected and how, in a way that was not quashing competition. My big concern with GDPR, which is the European privacy regulation, if you're listening and don't know that already, very interesting. But similarly, it has a very large barrier to entry. So we have rules and it costs a lot and it's a lot of work to get compliant to it, which means you can't spin up a company that does business in Europe unless you are already this tall, because you can't afford to comply. Compliance is a very expensive thing. And so now you're seeing only the bigger companies continue to drive new businesses. You're not seeing as many small businesses showing up there because it costs a lot. That said, you know, decoupling it from social media is, I think, a step, but bigger is building a framework of actual trust in how data is used and not this worry. You know, I'm not buying a new car right now. I think we've talked about this. I'm not buying a new car because I don't trust any of the data recipients with all of the telemetry and other things to actually tell me how that data is being used. If you could do that, a good job of that, and make it clear and give me actual options, I will buy your car. but I think it's a combination, not just social media, and none of that goes back to social media necessarily. I think it comes more to transparency.
I get your point, and I'm kind of interested in where the inflection point was on where the line where we started, where we said, all right, now tracking's taken it too far, right? I mean, if we historically go back and look at advertising, whether it be newspapers or, you know, go to TV commercials, right? I mean, there was an element of tracking that was done. Look at Nielsen, right? They were tracking the boxes, who was watching what. That was data generation at that time, kind of more of an opt-in model. But same thing was going on with focus groups, that we're going to get a representative sample and we're going to now throw buzzwords on, whether it be for advertisement, whether it be for a speech. I mean, all of that goes under the heading of manipulation, right? And manipulation, it doesn't always have to have a negative connotation to it.
Correct.
But you're fine tuning a message so that it resonates with somebody. And all we've done now is exponentially gone to the point where instead of tracking large groves of people, we are now to the point that we can very accurately dive into a single individual. And I can tell you specifically what makes Brian Schneebly tick. I know explicitly that if I throw a headline out there about somehow tying food to manufacturing in the automotive
sector,
how dare
you, Eric?
I've got his
eyes,
right? But it's there was an inflection point at some point where we said, all right, you know, if you track the collective whole, that's fine. But then we got into this, it starts creeping into the individual person. And then at some point we decide to draw a line. Well, maybe that's our own fault that we should have drawn the line somewhere further up the chain instead of it getting here. I'm not convinced that this is a semi rolling downhill breaks out. I'm not sure that this is something we're going to be able to stop. And that to me, that goes back to Brian, what you're saying and being fairly defeatist, that I think we need to find ways to, number one, like you guys were saying, bring further transparency to what the data is being used for. And what I do think we can do is I think we can start ring fencing some of the data and keeping it within certain ecosystems. And the expectation, all right, Amazon, you want to build your sidewalk, your mesh network, keep it within that. And if you want to go outside that model, and this is kind of somewhat of what GDPR did, that you want to share that with somebody else, making it exponentially deeper in enriching the data, now you need my approval, because now you are gaining another further insight about me. I don't know. I feel like I'm kind of rambling on that point, but it's...
No, I would agree with you. Like if you're going to find a way to use that data for something outside of the original scope that you promised, okay? And I won't even say promise, but the original intent, then it should be an opt-in. And if you ever decide you're going to sell it to monetize it, it should be an opt-in, right? Like, and this has happened across several different industries, including healthcare. Like when you're sharing the private data, there's an issue there, right? But like, you know, spinning backwards, when you said like the defeatist side of it, I think our industry, and this is a good example of marketing, how many chief information security officers, CISOs, management don't attend somebody's marketing event because they don't want to have to give up their email address,
right?
Knowing the potential for a million emails to come flying in. It's like a floodgate opens.
Or now have imagine... fake email addresses that they use. But yes, yours, I think yours is the more likely scenario.
Right. And on top of that, if I was to ask not only for your email address, but where do you eat dinner on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, you're never going to fill that out. Because then it's like, is this person going to show up to where my family eats dinner at?
Right.
I'm taking it one step further, right? But the idea is when you know that, and this goes back, Dan, you said targeting advertising on versus non-targeting and why, you know, a certain company may flip out if anyone was to ever put a study together to say that this one is not as effective as you believe it is. Part of that goes back to trust, right? And sometimes the best relationships are built on trust. And if you're asking a professional give up information just so you can bombard them with marketing information that you think now is so targeted that they're going to buy your product, I don't think that's how it works personally. And again, that's Brian's position, not my company's position. And I think that goes back to trust when these products are putting together these new applications on a feature called Sidewalk. And that, yeah, if I am going to trust you and you're going to do anything with that data in the future, are you ever going to figure out additional ways to monetize it? And I already feel like I've lost trust in the fact that I bought this product from you 5-6 years ago. And now all of a sudden you're connecting it with a bunch of other products and you're taking some of my bandwidth away. It's like, I didn't know that was going to happen. And I have to opt out, not right. Opt in.
Yeah. I think the struggle with that is, in going back to the front end of what you were saying, came down to the word intent, right? When intent changes. But I think my perspective, the way we play with that in US, it's a word game, right? If you look at, EULAs, right? The end user licensing agreement. Those are written in, one could argue, separate languages from English that nobody can understand. And they are written for the betterment of the company that is writing it, to give them the latitude to do whatever they want in the future with your data, with their services, with anything. But that's it's because it's a U.S. centric approach, and that we give more credence. And this is my personal opinion, that we give more. We are more focused on betterment of the corporation than the betterment of the individual, and that we allow corporations to write the rules of how we're going to protect people, what people need, right? Instead of forcing them to provide transparency into what they intend to do with some of that data. I think until we change that model, that people become more important than the corporations and innovation, I don't see this heading in a positive direction.
Yeah, I mean, we see this as they're navigating out all of the various state privacy regulations. Just this week, Colorado had some changes to theirs that added, coming out of committee, going into committee, it was a very, very consumer focused law. Coming out of committee, there were four new clauses added that were very pro-business, and one that was dangled back in there for, just as a bone back to consumers. But it was clearly skewed very much more toward business than it was when it went in, which was a much more consumer focused law. And now, don't get me wrong, there needs to be balance. We do operate in a world, and this is a capitalist country. there is a need for business, and there's a need for government, and there's a need for people. But I think it's a little too skewed one way right now, because that's where the power is, that's where the money is, and that's where that's the people who are able to make the right influences. Although I do think that's starting to change. People are voting with their wallets. People are buying on ethics. People are buying on trust, and people are buying on values in a way that they never have before. And the discussions within companies is definitely changing to how do we make sure the presence of ESG, environmental, social, and governance parts of the compliance organization, to really focus on the social presence of the company. Social meaning how they interact with society, not how they interact with social media. These are becoming large parts because people are actually buying this way. So I think it's a positive trend. As we all know, it takes a lot to move the Titanic. These are big things already in motion, and you can't just change them overnight. But people are changing how they buy, and companies are changing how they buy, and this starts to make the boat start to turn, and turn a little faster, and with time it will. Now, this is not me saying that it's good enough, because it ain't. There's a long ways still to go to find an actual balance between those that make and those that buy, but we're heading there.
I think you hit on a critical point, which is the balance, right? I'm going to step up on a soapbox for a second here. I think that the fundamental issue, I see this a lot with insecurity around the debates that we have, and it's a microcosm of, I think, society in general, that so many of the conversations that we have on polarizing topics, we try to boil them down to black and white most of the time. And the vast majority of time, they're not. It's the Dan Ayala, it depends, right? So you ask, should we be focused on people or should we be focused on business? The answer is yes. And that's what we need to start doing with some of these conversations. Instead of putting a flag in the sand here on the right side, putting a flag in the sand on the left side, and just holding to those poles, there has to be this happy medium of coming together on a creating kind of that win-win in some of the way we do legislation, the way we address security within our organizations. And it's very much got to be a melding to come to the center to find that ideal solution.
Indeed. And with that, unfortunately, we are at the end of our time once again. Wow, what a great discussion and a great debate. We hit on a whole bunch of topics. And the fact that we can include car rental agreements in any discussion means that I've checked something off of my bucket list. So here we are. thank you everybody for listening, and thank you Eric and Brian for another wonderful discussion. If you're interested in providing feedback, we want to hear it. We want to hear what you think of these episodes. We want to hear what you think of topics for future episodes. You can email us at feedback@greatsecuritydebate.net. Our website is greatsecuritydebate.net. and our Twitter is @securitydebate. We'll be back again soon with another great security debate.